I'm going to call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order for one of the last times, if not the last. I think we still have one thing coming over. So welcome, everyone. Today we have an agenda of hearings and work sessions. So I think what we'll do is, what are you here for, Dave? We're going to start off with a very brief public hearing on House Bill 3112. And Senator Farioli is here to talk on that. And Representative Freeman just walked in. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members of the committee, I will be brief. I remember many times as a freshman senator, the chair would look at the witnesses and say, would you like us to act on your bill, or do you want to sit there and talk it to death? So I don't want
to
do that.
We try to be a little more subtle, but we get the same message across.
Madam Chair, this is an important bill. What it does is begins to treat or does treat logging equipment with the same consideration that we've been treating farming equipment. It exempts it from personal property taxes. It's really important to the small woodland owners and the logging companies to be able to get that tax treatment in these difficult economic times. Everything helps. This would extend a sunset. We've had this policy in place in Oregon for about 10 years. It's extremely successful in helping small companies and logging companies and woodland owners stay competitive. So we urge you to extend the sunset, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Freeman and Representative Bailey, would you like to come up and join the happy?
And Madam Chair, with your good leave, I will repair to the Rules Committee, where I think I'm needed for a quorum.
Be excused, and I will be down as soon as I can.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and honorable members. I'll be very brief. I'm Tim Freeman. I represent House District 2, which are parts of Douglas County, Josephine County, and Jackson County. Quite clearly some of the best timber area in the state. This bill is vitally important for businesses in my community that are struggling at an all-time low in the economy and an all-time challenge for some of the issues that are going around logging. And this bill will allow them to hang on and maintain vital infrastructure that will be needed when the economy turns around. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I've given written testimony, and I won't read all that to you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your testimony. We will make it part of the record. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jules Bailey. I have the honor of representing House District 42. I am here to support my co-chief carrier. I will keep it very brief and say a good bill should pass. Very supportive.
Thank you very much. You two have worked on a couple of things this session very productively, and I wanted to thank you for your leadership, both of you, on this one.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Any questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you very much. David Moskowitz. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is David Moskowitz, and I'm here today on behalf of the Pacific Rivers Council, the Native Fish Society, the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, and the Audubon Society of Portland. While we appreciate the intent of this bill to provide some tax relief for the loggers in the state, who are certainly facing probably the brunt of the economic downturn in the housing market and the wood products. And I heard on the floor debate from Representative Smith that a lot of this applies to equipment that's idle. It's been idled by the economic state. We can appreciate that. However, this bill does defeat the original intent of this bill to encourage people who buy this kind of equipment for logging to upgrade their equipment so that they're getting equipment that truly is environmentally sensitive. This pushes that date back. It corrupts the intent of this tax break. So given the economic situation, however, if this body is going to move forward, we would greatly recommend that this date be that this be returned to the original intent when the economy changes, maybe in the end of this biennium or the next biennium. But making this permanent really is not, we don't believe it's appropriate. We believe there are impacts to, there are impacts to the very counties that this equipment is used in. And those are not insignificant, as you can see from the legislative fiscal, legislative revenue reports. The idea of what is truly environmentally sensitive logging equipment should not necessarily be solely defined by a date. And we'd like to have a conversation in the interim or next session on what that truly means and what it should mean. And we're not opposed to having this tax break out there in the tax code, but doing what this bill does is not fiscally responsible, and it's likely not environmentally responsible. We appreciate the opportunity to comment, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, and I just would appreciate your testimony. Just point out that sunsets in laws are the date by which the law expires unless renewed. But any tax break or any other provision we do as a legislature can always be looked at any time in the legislative process. With the economy the way it is right now, I think we're in one kind of environment. But I think this, along with any other tax policy or any other policy that we pass, is up for review every 2 years. And so I think that's important to understand as you look at something like this. So a sunset is just the deadline, but anything can be reviewed at any time.
Chair Burek, thank you for that. And we look forward to having that conversation, absolutely, in the next session.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have no one else signed up. Anybody else want to talk? Good. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3112. Open a work session on House Bill 3112. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3112 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 3112 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Telfer, would you like to carry this bill?
I'd love to.
Okay. All right. Now we will open, what else are you here for?
2393.
We will open you're here for 2393? Oh, okay, cool. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2393.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2393 increases fee collectible by sheriff for serving legal documents and performing other civil duties, and it it makes some other changes.
Okay, we'll find out more about this from our wet witnesses.
It is 1:30.
Here's some testimony that might help. Okay, and again, I would like to move along very quickly because we're missing a birthday party. So, welcome to the committee.
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brian Wallace, and I'm the Chief Civil Deputy for the Berrien County Sheriff's Office here in Salem. I'm here today on behalf of our civil law enforcement professionals throughout the state, Oregon Sheriffs for Action, and Sheriff Russ Isham with Marion County Sheriff's Office, to testify in support of House Bill 2393A, and I thank you for this opportunity. I'll try to be brief, but yet thorough enough to provide enough background so that you don't have a lot of questions.
We do have your prepared testimony.
Wonderful. For the record, I made a typo on the written testimony that was submitted saying that this was the Senate Judiciary. I realize that it's Revenue and Finance, so I apologize. Frantically cutting and pasting this morning. As I said, written testimony has been submitted to be a part of the official record. Real quick, Section 1 through 3 of this bill increases sheriff's fees for service and execution of process. Some fees have not been changed since the 1980s. The last time that we had a fee increase for sheriff's service fees was in 2003, and that was a minimal $3 increase per paper.
To expand on that, we did meet with the Oregon Collectors Association and reached an agreement for the fees, and the fees have been aligned with the value of inflation by the revenue finance office, I believe. Section 4-6 pertains to internet posting of sheriff sales. This doesn't change anything that's already in statute currently. Currently in statute, the state court administrator was supposed to develop a website for internet postings for sheriff sales only. They, because of financial reasons, could not do that. We met with them. They are completely okay with this bill and turning this over to the sheriffs. I want to say that we did meet with the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association and reached an agreement, and they are very satisfied that this will only affect sheriff sales only and no other public notice that may be required by law by a government agency. Section 7 through 8 makes it more clear as to how a sheriff is to proceed when notified of a challenge to a notice of garnishment. Currently, we're told or directed by a court on a writ of garnishment, if a challenge to that garnishment is filed with a notice of garnishment that's issued by a state agency, the statute is completely silent. And this was kind of my brainchild because I kind of ran into a slight problem with a state agency notice of garnishment, and nobody knew what to do. So this kind of clarifies and aligns it with what the court process is. And finally, Section 9 to 11 of the bill will ensure that a law enforcement agency that seizes a gambling device or fishing equipment will remain the agency that is responsible for the custody and storage of the equipment, which is better for chain of custody and evidentiary purposes in a criminal case. Currently, law enforcement agencies, if they seize a gambling device, which is considered a public nuisance, they can then turn that over to the sheriff. And there's really no good reason to do that. This bill would not prevent a sheriff to agreeing with a law enforcement agency to take that seizure over if that agency that does the initial seizure has limited space in their property room. So that's about all I have for the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have, and my colleague Christy Meister, Chief Civil Deputy with Lincoln County, is here as well.
Okay, thank you. And this came from our Judiciary Committee, correct?
Correct.
Okay. This is a subsequent referral, committee members. Welcome.
Hello, Senator Burdick and members of the committee. My name is Christy Meister with the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office. I'm here representing the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office, Sheriff Dennis Dotson, and Oregon Sheriffs for Action. I echo all the information that my colleague Brian has just presented to you. If necessary, I can expand upon with any questions, particularly related to the website bill and the crab pots and gambling devices.
Thank you, and thank you for coming all the way from Lincoln City to testify.
Thank you.
We're at the end of the session, so we tend not to be as chatty. Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much. can we skip you, Paul?
Yes, ma'am.
Things are going well. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2393. Open a work session on House Bill 2393. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2393 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2393 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection?
I'm just voting no.
You're voting no? Okay, take the roll, please.
Senator Hatch?
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Senator Telfer?
No.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator Byrd?
Aye. The bill moves to the floor, and I will carry it. Okay, now we will open a, for the audience, for anyone in the audience, we are not going to hear House Bill 2616 today. Oh, so we will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2873. Okay, Dr. Warner.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2873 comes to you from the House Revenue Committee. And what it does is it changes statute that was established in 1997 during a rather convoluted series of court decisions and legislative reactions over the taxation of PERS income and the income of federal retirees. There was an effort to ensure that the PERS beneficiaries received a full compensation for any increase in tax rates. There's in statute now, there is a language there that establishes a general benefit increase anytime the highest marginal income tax rate is increased. So with the legislative passage of House Bill 2649, what this bill would do is it would establish a PERS benefit adjustment based on a fixed 9% marginal personal income tax rate. And it would delete the language that increases, gives a general benefit increase for all PERS beneficiaries. And it would take effect immediately upon passage. We do have Dave Hendricks here from Legislative Council who has the scars from all of these various court decisions and legislative efforts to deal with the issue. And Dave probably knows more about it than anyone in the state. So, and we also have the PERS folks are here as well.
Okay. Let's see. Why don't we bring Dave up? There you are. To see if you have any questions. How does the mechanism work for this when a tax rate goes up?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Dave Hendricks from Legislative Council's office. Maybe just a little more on the background. I'll try to be real brief because I know you're rushed. In 1989, the U.S. Supreme Court told us that we had to tax federal retirees in the same way that we tax state retirees. At that time, we didn't tax them the same. We exempted state pensions, PERS pensions, but taxed all of the federal pension. In 1991, the legislature reacted to that by passing a law that said we're now going to tax everybody. And the question at that time was whether we're going to be able to do that to PERS retirees because everybody knew there was a potential contract rights claim because the statute always said one of the part of the deal was is that when you get your pension, it won't be subject to state income tax. But in 1991, the legislature, acting with advice from the Attorney General, thought they could do that, passed a law that taxed everybody, gave a small benefit increase to the PERS retirees to partially offset the fact that they were now taxing their pensions, and went home. Well, the Oregon Supreme Court came back and said, no, taxing their pensions did impair the contract of PERS members. So if the legislature, if you are going to tax those benefits, you're going to have to provide them with a remedy that makes them whole. The one thing the court did that lessened the blow of that a bit was to say, however, because you passed that law in 1991 saying that you were going to submit a taxation, we are going to say that was okay for purposes of service performed by people after 1991, and we're only going to say that you have to compensate PERS folks for service for pension that's attributable to service before 1991. So it is complicated, and a lot of it has come out of these cases. And we had to treat federal retirees in a consistent fashion. At that point, it was hoped that by providing a benefit increase to the PERS retirees, that the state would then continue to tax fully the pensions of federal retirees. Well, then the Oregon Supreme Court came back and said, no, the benefit increase was more or less the equivalent of a tax refund. Therefore, you're still not taxing state and federal retirees equivalently. And it was at that point that the legislature, and I believe this was in 2001, enacted a law exempting pension for federal retirees before 1991, and left us with a pension increase, benefit increase for PERS retirees. And that was in 1995, we passed that. And basically it was tied directly to the maximum Oregon tax rate, which is 9% then, still 9%, and basically said that we're going, that the benefit would be calculated based on the tax rate. With bills like 2649, which is what they didn't see coming at that time, yes, there's an increase in the maximum personal income tax rate, but it's only for a very small category of taxpayers, those who earn more than $125,000 single taxpayer, $250,000 for joint filers. And so if you did not make these changes under 238.380, which is the Section 1 of this Act, there would be an automatic increase for everybody in PERS in their pension benefit, even though the number of people we're talking about who would actually be paying any additional tax would be extremely small. You know, people who are getting PERS pensions and have more than $125,000, certainly there are probably a few out there, but they're not going to be a huge number. So this decouples the benefit increases from the maximum taxing rate, maximum tax rate for Oregon taxpayers, and leaves open the question about what we are going to do about those few taxpayers out there who, in fact, do have some tax impact and who, under the case that was decided in 1994, the Hughes v. Oregon case, what we're going to do about those. And this kind of gets left to a later date.
Very well spoken, and if that ends up being something that has to be solved, we're coming back in February. Senator Hass.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One question. This adjustment is for any retiree, regardless of whether they live in the state, right? So someone is retired in Washington and doesn't pay any income tax, they still get this 9% adjustment.
Chair Burdick, Senator Haas, that's correct with respect to the existing law and would also be correct with respect to these an additional benefit increase if this change wasn't made.
Senator Telfer?
Oh, boy, I remember these years, and there were a lot of protective claims filed all over the place. Will this have any fiscal impact because of any protective claims that are still out there pending on any of those tax changes?
Mm-hmm. Chair Burdick, Senator Telfer, I don't know of any continuing litigation over these issues. I think we're well past all of those. It's conceivable we will have new claims because of if people are in fact subjected to a tax under 2649 and the legislature has not provided a benefit to address it. I will say that in 1995, when we passed 238.380, it was a broad brush solution to how to deal with the pension benefit and the court cases that had already been won. And it basically wasn't keyed to the actual tax anybody pays, because most people, in fact, paid the 9% marginal rate. There were very few people who were going to have such small incomes that they were paying less of that. And we also had the problem of the out-of-state taxpayers, all of which were discussed at that time. But the approach is fairly broad. I think that in looking at the group we're looking at here, there are probably people will want to consider a more focused solution to it rather than a broad brush one similar to what we had here.
Clarification, maybe I'm asking the wrong person. When I meant protective claim, that's what you file with a tax return that says if there's a change in the tax law regarding the handling of this on this tax return in subsequent years, I get to, you know, basically file an amendment, even though the statute may have run. I get to file an amendment and reclaim some taxes that I paid. So I meant revenue.
Should we call the PERS people up and...
It would be revenue people, I think. It's a tax issue on a tax return.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. To my knowledge, we don't have any protective claims remaining from Davis, federal retirees, state retirees, those have all been resolved at this point.
And this doesn't affect any of them?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, it should not affect anything that's currently any prior years.
Okay.
Other questions?
So, Madam Chair, just to clarify, so basically we need to pass this bill to avoid there being a general PERS increase. Is that correct?
Chair Burdick, Senator Rosenbaum, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much to both of you. Let's see. I think...
Madam Chair, can I say, you also have in your packet a B5 amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And this amendment is unrelated to the original bill. It's a correction of a bill that has passed through Senate Bill 112. And it was requested by PERS to help correct that error. So they're here to comment on that.
Okay. And this is basically, this bill was just a vehicle to accomplish a technical fix for another bill. So why don't we drag the PERS people up here and see if anybody has any questions. And just tell us briefly what the amendment does, if you would. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Steve Rodman, the Deputy Director with PERS. All that the technical amendment does is correct some numbering of the paragraphs referred to by Senate Bill 112. So it's just a number change.
Okay. Senator Telfer.
That's a number change. What? Explain to me Section 4, then, regarding the hours of work subsequent to January 2004.
Senate Bill 112 had a change in the number of hours that were counted, or in how hours were counted for the retirees that returned to work. Senate Bill 112 was made retroactive to January 1, 2004, that change that was put in that bill. Section 4 just makes the numbering align to that change. So the concept of making that retroactive was already in the original bill. This just makes sure that the number change is also retroactive.
And is Senate Bill 112 all the way through the process?
It's enrolled, yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, other questions? Thank you very much. Okay, so we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2873 and open a work session on House Bill 2873, and we have a dash B5 amendment. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move the dash B5 amendments to House Bill 2873.
Senator Morris has moved the dash B5 amendments to House Bill 2873. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2873 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2873 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Telfer.
You know, I'm going to vote no on this. I have been involved in this over the years, and just being handed this has not given me any time to even read through the amendment. So I'm feeling uncomfortable with making a decision on something that could have numerous unintended consequences, or, you know, so I'm just voting no because I've not had the opportunity to read through this massive amount of information that has a very technical application.
Are you talking about the bill or the amendment?
Both.
Both. Okay. All right. So noted for the record. Would you please call the roll?
Senator Hatt?
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Senator Telfer?
No.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
Senator Burdick?
Aye. Okay, the bill moves to the floor, and Senator Rosenbaum will carry this. All right, what do we have left here?
2904.
All right, there it is. 29, and we are ready on that? Okay. We will now open a work session on House Bill 2904. Hi, Dave.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, this is in front of you. You have dash A6 amendment too. The addition to the version that passed the House House Bill 2904 is that a certain farm structures are now exempt from property taxation. And in your Dash A 6 amendment, on page 3, line 14 through 22 refers to that addition.
So this basically, the amendment basically focuses on the use rather than on the type of structure. Is that correct?
And temporary in nature. Mm-hmm. And primarily to grow plants for agriculture and horticulture production.
Okay, could we have Ron Phillips and one of you guys or both of you guys come on up? There was a little bit of, do we have anybody from the county here? You can speak for the county, John. Okay. There was some problems with an earlier amendment because of how it would be interpreted. Can you tell us how this amendment got before us?
Sure, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Phillips of the Oregon Department of Revenue. There was a Dash 5 amendment that we believe captured the essence of the exemption sought by the parties, the proponents, Mr. Stone and the rest. There was a suggestion to remove the term greenhouses from that amendment. And we felt that that created a significant amount of ambiguity. The parties agreed, though, to remove the term greenhouses. And when that came to our attention, I was able to, through some questioning, to ascertain that the parties had different expectations of the result of that change. And so in order to clarify what it was that was needed, I spoke with Representative Roblin. He told me what he was expecting. I met with legislative counsel last night, and we said, let's remove these terms that people disagree with and maybe would be misunderstood. Let's talk about what the property is used for. And so what the property is, these structures will be used to grow plants. So whether they're called greenhouses or hoop houses or whatever, they won't include barns and machine sheds. And even though you might have a tractor with moss growing on a seat in the barn, it has to be primarily used for the growing of plants. So I think the Dash A4s and the Dash A6s do the exact same thing, but I think it solves the confusion that was out there, and I think it gets folks where they want it to be.
Thank you. And Mr. Stone, if you would just put your blessing on it.
Madam Chair, Jeff Stone, Oregon Association of Nurseries. We appreciate the department's work with us to try to get at the core issues. We support the A6s and think this bill should pass.
Okay, and I take it you've been in consultation with Representative Roblin on this. And that
Madam Chair, yes.
This is the approach he wants to take as well. Okay.
Madam Chair,
Senator Morris.
Question, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
There was also an issue with respect to the kinds of things that might be used within these
hoop houses.
That was a new term for me. That would be miscellaneous, but would not be permanent. If you're trying to bring water into these, or you're trying to move air through them, the concern would be that if you have these things that are really portable and not permanent, would that remove the exemption for the entire structure? And I want to make sure that issue is clear, if we may.
I think you meant permanent rather than portable, whether the permanency would remove the exemption.
If the hoop house is, they're not particularly permanent.
No.
They kind of come and go, but if you're running an irrigation line into it, and you put up a blower at one end to move the air through, does that negate the exemption? I think that's the question, as I understand it.
Madam Chair,
Senator Morris, without getting into any level of depth on the technicality of that, I would say that this bill adds structures only that are used for these purposes of plant growth and production. Already in that same statute that this amendment changes is a section 1, which talks about frost control systems,
I believe, air movement and those kinds of things that control temperature. So I think if you look at what is now in the dash A6, page 2, line 26 through 30, the following equipment, machinery, and tangible personal property is exempt, including A, frost control systems used in agriculture. Would you, Jeff, do you think that pretty much?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, I think that your question is the right one. I think, without putting words in my friend to my right's mouth, I think that that what he just described would take care of the issue to the degree that you are seeking. Is that right?
This bill does not change the exemption for anything involving irrigation systems. Or if they're exempt now, under current law, they would be still exempt under this bill, as with any frost control system, as with any air movement system, and all of that.
I think what Senator Morris was getting at was if any of these are permanent, you've got your structure, which is by definition a temporary structure. If you have a permanent one of these things going in, whether that would interfere with the temporary status of the... Is that what you were getting at, Senator Morris?
Well, I think, as I understand, the potential issue is the hoop house definitely qualifies for the exemption. If you have... I don't think there's any question about that. But if you have something that you're adding to that, where you may have an irrigation line that you bring in, and you mount a fan on one end, does that in any way eliminate the exemption for the hoop house?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, I can definitely answer no. That would in no way affect the exemption on this. If the building is there, adding a water system or any other heating system would not change the fact that that building, if it is used for these purposes, would continue to be exempt.
Okay, thank you. I think that's exactly what we were looking for.
Okay, thank you.
Clarification.
I apologize for not
catching. It took us 2 days to get there, but we finally got there. Okay, thank you very much. Okay.
And Madam Chair, are we supposed to have a dash A6 in front of us?
Yes, we do. I do.
It's on A5.
No, there's an A6.
Was that in the packet today?
It was on today's packet, okay. Right there under your green thing. There you go. Okay, we will close the hearing on... Oh, no, it's just not hearing. We're still in work session, and we have a dash 6 amendment. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 6 amendment to House Bill 2904.
Senator Morris has moved the dash 6 amendment to House Bill 2904. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2904 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2904 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Morris, since you asked the most questions on this, you get to carry it.
be happy.
Houses, we'll talk about it.
We'll educate the body.
Senator Morris, I particularly like the expression of wonder on your face as you say hoop houses.
Madam Chair, just so everyone knows, those are not basketball gyms.
Okay, that completes our agenda committee. This could very well be our last committee meeting, but we are one of those committees that stays in session forever and ever at the call of the president. So we will stand by, but if we don't meet again, I just want you to know what a wonderful committee this has been. I appreciate all of your
great
all
chair.
Of your work.
Yeah, you've done a great job.
Chair.
Chair.
Thank you. We are adjourned.